Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Up a pew and have a brew, everyone. But while the kettle boils, don't stay if you don't want to get spoiled. It's time for another exciting episode of I forgot the Well, I got after all that, I forgot what we're actually doing here. What is this called? The Superfan Chats.
That's what it is.
Anyone who listens to Three Black Halflings knows I will come up with stuff and then forget it. And so I didn't even come up with Superfan Chats. It's a great name anyway, but I still forgot it. So we're here for another exciting round of Superfan Chats. I am Superfan Jeremy, and I'm joined by...
Superfan Pip.
Superfan Alice.
Yay! Welcome, Superfan Alice!
Thank you! Yay. I'm very excited to be here.
We have a new recruit.
Yeah.
Yay.
Everyone, please give Alice a whoop whoop wherever you are right now.
Whoop whoop.
Thank you, everybody. Whoop, whoop.
Yeah, we're so happy to have you. Thank you so much for joining our little crew.
Yeah,
this is going to be really cool. Yeah, and what a doozy to come in on, by the way. Like, the episode that you're doing today.
Yes.
This was a very eventful...
Yes.
Yeah, this was a very, very eventful trio of episodes, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Just a pile of things. So I guess this is for episodes 64, 65, and 66.
Yep.
I will be doing episode 64. Should I go ahead and hop in?
Please do.
Or does anyone have anything they want to get out of the
way?
Okay.
Jump in.
I'm holding my nose. I'm jumping right in. Feet first. Here we go. So episode 64, at the beginning of this, I was wondering how they were going to handle this with Enkidu having been taken over at the end of episode 63.
Yes, by Alcibiades.
Yes, yes. And it turns out they decided to just eliminate the problem entirely and have us begin with Enkidu coming to the group, and Gwendolyn in particular were caring for him and were very worried about whether he was okay. I think Gwendolyn had like a cold compress on his forehead.
Oh.
And then as soon as he comes to, Gwendolyn proceeds to slap him right in the face.
Yeah.
for having gone off and endangered himself yet again.
Yep.
Enkidu tells them everything that happened, although as it turns out, Alcibiades had already told the group everything, so that means that I guess they did not trust Alcibiades, which, I mean, makes sense.
We didn't hear what he said, though. Did he embellish a few details? We'll never know.
Hmm. Yes, I mean, he did also explain that Enkidu had been sneaking out at night.
He did.
Which the group was not happy about either.
Dropped him right in it.
Yeah. But Enkidu came out with what I thought was a very interesting explanation. He's like, look, I'm really the one who has a strong connection to like the darkness and the underworld and the, you know, the things that happen in the dark. And so I'm the one who has to handle that stuff because none of you guys are that way. And Juno responds with an extended bit about that you need the darkness along with the light,
yep.
which I think ultimately means that Enkidu needs the group and shouldn't run off by himself. But also that the group needs him.
Yeah.
Because they provide a beautiful contrast to one another. And at that, Gwendolyn followed up her previous slap with a pat.
Aww.
We went from slap to pat, so that's nice. They proceed to then get Enkidu back up to full health, using, of course, Song of Rest, but also a new ability that Juna has not used before, Empowered Healing. Does anybody know, actually, what level of an ability is Empowered Healing for a sorcerer?
I was relying on you, Jeremy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just occurred to me that I meant to look that up, and I'm going to look it up right now.
Okay.
Because it might actually, I'm guessing that's something that is peculiar to Juna's specific subclass. Yes, empower. Oh, okay. So she's had this since she has had this ability since sixth level.
Okay.
So yeah, so she's had this one for a little bit, but I don't think they take tons and tons of short rests. Although they've been taking more recently. We've had some very long adventuring days. Over, especially post like episode 30 or episode 25 ish, there have been some like really long adventuring days. So yeah, they throw on some healing. Guy plays Always Look on the Bright Side of Life, or while a very suspiciously similar track that David composed plays along with it.
Yep.
And they discuss plans. They're gonna go for the breakout. Mm-hmm. But they only have a certain amount of time, so they're probably going to frame it as a breakout, so they'll have leverage. So they can get info. They decide to split up pre-breakout. Juna goes off with Gwendolyn, and Kidu and Gaius go off with Orin. The first thing that happens is that we have a... Well, I'll do... Because they actually do the Abracalads lads, then jump to the women, then back to the lads.
Yep.
But I'm going to do it women, then all lads.
That works.
Just to make it easier.
Sure.
So Gwendolyn and Juna head over to check in on Harren. Harren is not in, so they use sending to ask him if he's been redacted. Acting their names from the reports, or if he knows who's been doing it.
Mm-hmm.
He claims it wasn't him and that he doesn't know. So the next logical conclusion is that it's probably the Wingthrups involved, or someone connected to that, because who else would have a good reason to remove the group from all of these reports?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody sets off. Juna buys 25 gold pieces worth of flowers, which is so many. Like,
That's a lot of flowers.
Yeah. I don't know that David has ever said, like, what the average annual salary is in this world. But you gotta think, if it's anything like parallel to like a medieval world, the average flower salesperson might be lucky to make 25 in a month.
Yeah.
If not longer. So Juna cleaning this place out of flowers. I think they said they had so many she needed a cart.
It was the entire
wagon.
Them all. Yep.
Yeah. And Kidu, she would not let Kidu have a single one.
Nope.
and so she, while the Abracalads went off to City Hall, Juna explained to Gwendolyn that she's planning to use the flowers as part of a divination ritual. They head to check in on Casula, which she was not in at the moment, so they decided to call Gwendolyn's sister, Prim, to help them override the security line that was keeping them out of where they needed to go. A delightful scene ensued, culminating with Prim agreeing to tell Juna alone in exchange for a story. And she tells a story about in the Rillian Isles, a talented dancer joins a cavalcade, and she gradually learns to find joy in the small things in life. A wonderful moment. And Prim then explains that the lion can be deactivated by stroking its left ear 3 times, which I think just shocked everyone, because I think they probably thought it was going to be something more elaborate.
Yeah.
but honestly, who would think to do that anyway?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I think that's a perfectly acceptable way of turning off a piece of security. They then deactivate the lion. They go and sit in the library to wait for Casula to return. And then the Abracalads have headed to City Hall. They ask to access building plans.
Mm-hmm.
But while they're doing this, Orin notices the bust of a woman named Richissa Furman, who was mayor hundreds of years prior and had a pet duck named Lady Quackington III. Could this be the mysterious duck? Almost definitely. But who knows? There may be another duck that shows up. They do manage to reach the archives. They discover that Chargelt Hall had been passed down through members of the High Circle throughout the centuries. However, they do not have access to the specific plans of that building or a lot of the other buildings, as they are, in fact, private. I think you have to be part of the Arcanist Consortium, in fact, to gain access to those.
Yeah, they were there at this consortium rather than in the archives, weren't they?
Yes. Yes. And then as they're leaving, Orin happens to spy a section labeled Nobility, and he's like, I gotta steal something. Orin getting them sticky fingers. So Gaius decides to cause a diversion. And what a diversion. I don't know why he felt the need to go this big with it, but he conjured the illusion of a gold dragon crashing in through the wall and setting fire to City Hall.
Requesting pastries.
Yes.
Pastry dragon.
Enkidu helps to sell this illusion by pretending to fight the dragon while Orin turns invisible and starts to grab documents about the Baryon and the Dotharan families. But unfortunately, no one could have predicted such a huge diversion, what appears to be a full-on dangerous attack that could result in the deaths of hundreds if left unchecked, does attract the attention of the authorities, and the Arcanist Consortium appear, dispel all magic in the area, and cast Mass Hold Person.
Yep.
So the episode ends with our lads having been nabbed.
What an end to this episode. Oh, my word.
Yes.
It was so funny. I was tense, but I was also... It was so funny.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was such a stupid illusion.
Yeah.
That's a classic moment.
Yeah.
I feel like that is a classic memorable moment that we heard just in the moment. He's like, yep. This one's gonna stick around for a while.
Yeah. Oh, my word. And I feel, do you know what? It could have gone so differently. If Gaius had decided to stay with Gwen and Juna instead... It probably would have been fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like, he probably wouldn't have summoned a dragon.
No.
Honestly, he could have just started playing a song. He could have just been like, there's so many other things. He could have tripped over something and run like one of those grifter schemes where he pretends to be injured and threatens to sue. And so like all the staff are having to help him out. Like there's all these different things, but he decides to go big or go home.
Yeah.
And it turns out he went too big and now can't go home.
Yes.
A wonderful episode. I really like how most of the episode, it starts with a lot of tension, which it then sort of eases. Mm. And then we have just a lot of nice, delightful classic D&D moments, culminating with a very classic D&D moment that spins completely out of hand and ends up being a wonderful capper for this episode. I very much enjoyed this one.
It's a really good one.
Yep.
Do we have anything more to say about episode 64? Any more thoughts about maybe the Wingthrups being the ones who are redacting the names or any other information that we tried? Perhaps the fact that Chargalt Hall has been passed down specifically through members of the High Circle? Anything like that?
There was a lot of info.
Yes. Do you reckon that Chargalt Hall might hold one of the mirrors or the windows that we saw like in Crowls?
Oh,
that's a good thought.
Mm-hmm.
Someone there.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It could well
be. That would be. The High Circle have really been coming into play a lot, especially in these episodes.
Mm, yeah.
And I'm wondering when we'll get to learn more about, because there's so many layers to this. Like, the more we explore, the more Baby David has created. And so it's like, oh my gosh, we got the Arcanist Consortium, and how are they in with the Wingthrups? Are they connected with the Wingthrups at all? And how are the Arcanists involved? Like, how are the Arcanists connected to the High Circle? Mm-hmm. Obviously they're part of the same government institution, but like in terms of like, do they have the same aims?
Yeah.
Do they know what the High Circle are doing? Well, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, you've got to wonder if they know about the golems. Like, surely, I mean, obviously the Wingthrups that are part of the consortium know about the golems, but does anyone else? Like, I feel like if you're just anywhere reading someone's mind, you'd pick up on a Wingthrup thinking, oh, army of golems in the basement.
Well, don't you have to be like a pretty high ranking, not a high ranking member, but you have to get pretty far through the Wingthrup training in order to get even access to the knowledge about the golems, right?
True. And would they be robots that the Arcanists, like in Kido?
Oh, the one that stabbed Gaius in the hand, you mean?
Yeah.
That one. I suspect. So, because we're still a bit iffy about whether when Enkidu did his inside check, whether that was what prompted that particular Wingthrup Arcanist to turn up immediately, or whether that was just kind of coincidence as well, aren't we? We're still a bit...
Yep.
Don't know. Although we've not had a chance to ask you, Alice, about that, actually, to be fair. So...
Yeah.
Oh, no, I thought that was spot on. Yeah.
I think that's a really good theory that, like, in fact, the Arcanist Consortium, or many of the members, may just be fully in it with the Wingthrups because they have been already converted into artificial beings.
That's terrifying.
We've blown the whole thing wide open.
Ah!
Yeah. Oh man, I kind of wish that the party would ask one of the other Arcanists about like what happened to Enkidu and be like, can we maybe do like some surgery or something to find out what exact, like, is he just a replicant in that he looks entirely human and you have to do a bunch of tests to find out that he's not? Or is it like he's a Terminator where like you peel back the skin and there's a metal endoskeleton inside? Like, what is he?
But then there's the whole blood thing, like... his blood is important. That's what Eridus said, wasn't it? So there must be something organic in there.
Yeah. So at the very least, he's at least part flesh. Yeah. Do we think it's his brain that was changed primarily?
Well, maybe in the sense that they put like a chip in there or something, like whatever the fantasy version of, I don't know, the chip from Buffy that they put in to Spike. Yeah. But he's still very him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or at least he thinks he's him.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where like he has all of his memories, mm-hmm. so he is convinced that he's him, which is also a weird thing to consider. Like, how much of the original Enkidu is actually in this new Enkidu? Is this the same person or a different person? Anyway, this is off topic of the episode. but it's these sci-fi concerns are very interesting to me.
Oh, but it's so juicy to talk about.
Yeah, it really is.
Oh. Well, shall I continue, guys?
Yeah.
I will, as quick as I can, quickly sum up episode 65, which was a split party, which I really enjoyed the fact that we had kind of the first half being the Abracalasses and then the second half being the Abracalads. I thought this was really fun. So part one was just Gwen and Juno. And there's a quick little conversation where they're still in the Romanet house and they have a chat with Kasula just about kind of sidestepping their actual little quest to have to go to Chargout Hall. Like, Gwen doesn't give her too much information, but she just kind of asks her about that and she kind of warns her to just be careful about it. And confirms that they're going to leave the house at 9 o'clock and kind of gives them some sort of timeline for what's going to be going on that next day. The coolest thing is that Kasula gives Gwen the war fan.
Yeah.
That's been so long coming.
Yeah.
And it sounds beautiful. I mean, I would love to see the write-up about it, but just the way that he kind of described, like, as you swish it around, there's the smell of roses and it's kind of got this, like, little sort of... you can see little rose petals coming out, and it's such a fabulous image, this fan. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. Juno, meanwhile, whilst Gwen goes out and has a kind of a practice with it, goes and chats to some of the household staff, seemingly quite kind of inconsequentially, we think.
Mm.
But wait. So we chat to Yara the cook, and she doesn't really know very much about Chargout Hall, and then talk to Kurt the footman, ... who seems a little bit more kind of keen to talk, but says, oh yeah, I don't know that much about that place either. Then they do their divination ritual, which again, really nice imagery this. I really like the way that Vicky described it, with the kind of the different coloured flowers being the seven petals, like a little kind of rainbow flower. I think that was really cool. And they decide to ask the question about where Pellegrini is specifically inside Chargout Hall. And the flowers tell them that he's underground, which is really useful information, actually, because even though it doesn't sound like it's an absolutely massive house, it's going to save them a lot of time knowing that they've just got to go down.
Mm-hmm.
Then once they've done that ritual, Kasula comes back in to talk to them in the courtyard, and she's in a different coloured robe and kind of asks what they've been up to when they've done this ritual and says, oh, who's beneath the house then, kind of catching the end of their conversation. She, in quotes, gets the following information: that it's Pellegrini, that it's to do with the Children of Havoc, which house they're going to, Chargout Hall, that there's a rose security lion, and how to deal with it. Which is quite a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, then we reconnect with Kasula in the red robe and says, yep, the rooms are prepared, that's all fine. You can sort of stay in one of these rooms for the night. There might not be enough space for the boys, but at least you guys can stay here overnight. And then at the end of part one, Juno attempts to send a sending to the boys to catch up with them. And like when they were in the Wingthrup kind of underground, just gets no connection with them whatsoever. So it's quite an uncertain end to part one. Shall I blast on straight away with part two as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so much in this episode. So much went on. So part two is with the lads. They've had this mass held person. And They eventually get transported across to the Arcanist Consortium, which in some ways great because that's exactly where they wanted to go. However, circumstances. They know that the Arcanists are also reading their thoughts. So they're doing their best to kind of channel their surface thoughts about ducks and spoons. And Gaius, to start with, is panicking and then decides that actually it might be better to just think about some dragon porn.
Classic guy.
Amazing moments, amazing moments. They get taken into some holding pens and they have to put all their belongings into the chest. I really like the detail on these, this kind of explanation about how exactly they're arrested and how it all works and stuff. I think it's quite interesting. It sort of tells you a lot about the Arcanists, actually. And yeah, the three of them are desperately trying to find ways to kind of circumvent David's planning. And you know, Ben takes the icebreaker's knife and tries to hold it and hide it inside Orin's leg brace. And he's like, nope. And then obviously submits that. And David's like, nope. And he's like, what have I got? And he's got the Homeward Door key around his neck. Hasn't even thought about that. But David's planned for that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they end up in these pens for about 6 hours overall. Various other things they try, which actually, given that I'm not huge up on gameplay, Jeremy, you might be able to give me more information if I've misunderstood various bits of it. Enkidu tries to summon his pack weapon, but nothing happens because there's just, you know, a dispel. What do they call it? Is it just a dispel magic field or?
Yeah, it appears to be rather than, I think they were calling it an anti-magic field, but the way that David was describing it almost sounded like it was detecting the magic and then preventing it than just like, no magic can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the way that he was, because he was like, oh yeah, no, it would detect that and then like stop. That was, it may have just been a semantics thing, but it sounded like it was perhaps a more complicated mechanism than just like, no magic.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, magic. Stop!
Yes. Orin tries to do an infuse item on a toilet handle as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think much comes of that in the end.
He succeeds, but he doesn't use
it. Yeah. And Enkidu snaps a bit of the wood off of the bed and then uses his own blood to try and engrave the Wingthrup sigil as well. And I don't think, again, much comes of him doing that because the magic won't work inside the cell. But anyway, they have a good go at trying to just see what they can get away with whilst they're waiting. Out of the three of them, Orin is collected first, and he's led into a room where Clayne Iovette is inside, who casts a pretend zone of truth. Basically, the fact that Orin pocketed those government documents was a bit of an issue because obviously when they took his bag, they found them. Then they have a bit of a chat about how to get past this, and he agrees to let Iovette basically falsely implant a memory or to change his memories to make it look like he was innocent after all. Then Gaius goes in next. They know he's responsible for the dragon, so that's a bit of a problem, and that they need to come up with a suitable punishment so that they can kind of maintain their cover. His choices are either an inhibitor hex for 24 hours or a kind of magical shock collar. So he chooses the shock collar, and it's going to give him psychic damage for every level of spell he uses. The damage goes up. And he is asked where he wants the sigil to go, and he has it inscribed on his butt cheek. Which again, anyone, it would be Gaius, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we're nearly there. Enkidu's last. He doesn't have a punishment. He's just kind of kept up to date with things, tells Iovette about the hex, helping the Children of Havoc and the time limit. And, you know, he's basically kind of congratulated and said, oh, you're a bit of a hero for battling that pretend dragon. Wink, wink. And then finally, once all three of them have been interviewed and let out, they're kind of come back together in like this waiting room. And actually, I think they got off quite lightly. The only things that Orin has taken from him, apart from the stolen documents, which fair enough, was Kral's necromancy book was taken from him as well, which is a bit of a shame, but could have been worse. And then finally, as they're leaving the Arcanist Consortium, they notice the stone casket of Adafil Chargelt is buried there and surrounded by like three robed figures in a circle, which are supposed to represent the members of the kind of original High Circle. And they head back to Plumbridge. End of episode. Oh, my word. Wow.
Oh, it's a mammoth undertaking. Well done.
Yeah, well done.
Whew.
That's one of the longest episodes
I think they've done. Yeah, yeah, it was about 2 hours, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was, action-packed as well. Just
oh, yeah.
So much stuff went on.
It did.
Yeah. I'm right there with you in terms of loving the split recording where he records with half the group first and then half of the group.
It was really effective, wasn't it? Cause...
in a very creative way. As somebody who like makes actual play stuff, you don't normally hear people mess with it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really cool. Like in terms of actual recording structure.
Yeah.
I thought that was great.
It was cool. I was super stressed. I mean, mainly during the boys one, because I didn't pick up on Kasula at all. Like,
no.
I didn't twig at all. So I was like, the girls one's going really well. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it gets to the boys one and it's like, they're taking the key. I was so stressed about the key.
I know. Oh my goodness, that could have been terrible if they didn't get that back, wouldn't it?
I know. What if they tried the key while they had it? Did they? We don't know.
We don't know what they've done with their stuff. They've obviously had a good route through it because they found those documents.
Exactly.
Yeah. I wonder if they cast Identify on everything.
I feel like you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably their
policy. So they probably at least know what it does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be on the side of the Arcane Consortium, but they would be stupid if they hadn't done that.
Yeah.
They would be thorough, wouldn't they? You know?
Yeah.
If someone's casting a dragon in an archive.
And stealing books and all
and
that
stealing
stuff.
Yeah. And stealing things about the nobility, especially given the unrest with the king situation at the moment. They
exactly.
might take an interest.
Exactly. They were doing their jobs in this case. They were actually just doing their jobs. Because after the assassination attempt, like one or two days before, now there is a faked dragon attack
mm-hmm.
at City Hall. like that, we gotta look into this.
At least their names are going to be redacted from all of this. So, you know, it's fine.
Hey.
That's good, isn't it?
You do what you like.
Well, I mean, Enkidu's a hero, so he doesn't need to worry about getting redacted or not. Like,
yeah.
I wonder if he can like leverage this down the line into like a good standing with the consortium. Like, look, I've done all this.
Yeah.
I am a documented dragon slayer.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. Meanwhile, Guy specifically is seen as like a terrorist, a real menace. He's under surveillance
with clear problems given his sort of interest in dragon porn.
Yeah.
Yes. Which I loved the way Chris worked that into the explanation for why he just claimed he accidentally cast the spell because he was just thinking about all the dragonborn. Chris has had a wonderful run of episodes.
Yeah.
He really has. Yeah. Its question is, what do we think? Do we think that we've seen the Faceless Footman's face or main identity, like one of their primary identities at this point?
Ooh, I don't think they have one.
Interesting.
Because I don't think Kurt is them.
No.
And it's definitely not Kasula.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless like we don't know a lot about Kasula, but it's definitely not Kasula.
Mm.
No, not Kasula Prime.
Kasula
but
Prime.
It does. But the thing
Kasula
is,
Red.
Yes, but it does seem like the footman doesn't just transform to look like those people. It sounds like they can transform. Did I misread and maybe or mishear rather in the next episode that the footman can transform to be those people?
Yeah, it must be.
Yeah, because they're about the smell thing and the discussion about who and how can get through the barrier and.
Mm-hmm.
There's a definite distinction there, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Would that then mean that the footman has some sort of like true polymorph abilities? Because even a changeling doesn't become the person. They just look like the person.
Yeah.
So, but true polymorph can turn you into a person.
Yeah, it's definitely something special.
Yeah.
Would it be a way to halt the aging process as well?
Depending on if you have access to the spell True Polymorph, and I think with True Polymorph, if you stay polymorphed for like more than an hour, you stay that way. So theoretically, if you are changing yourself into a person and you can cast True Polymorph a bunch of times, you could True Polymorph yourself into a younger person.
Ooh.
What if it is actually Chargelt?
Whoa.
Because I want to know the reason why they were deposed.
Whoa.
And I don't think we're going to find out anytime soon, but that is as good a reason as any.
That's a great theory.
Because, like, you can't trust them anymore.
No.
If you don't know who they are at any point.
Mm.
Yeah, you wouldn't care as much for the sanctity of human life or whatever life if you were someone who was, like, hundreds of years old.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, that's a very, and it would also make sense with like all of the teases that we've had about Chargelt and about the High mm-hmm. Circle and everything like that. It would be a very interesting way to take that.
Yeah,
like they became like an immortal serial killer.
Yeah,
and have just existed over the ages since then, just chilling and killing. Also, one thing, Clain Eovet cast, I'm guessing, Modify Memory on Orin, which is like, I think, an 8th level spell? Let me see. I think Modify Memory is really high level.
Yeah.
They don't say that he's casting Modify Memory, mm-hmm. but what is described sounds like Modify Memory, because I think, it's 5th level, it's not an 8th level.
Okay.
But still, 5th level, I mean, I guess that's to be expected. So that means that he's at least, level 9 as whatever he is.
Yeah.
Which I'm guessing he's... Yeah, if he's just casually tossing out that magic,
yeah.
then I'm guessing he's at least like...
So he's interviewed he's a lot of people.
10. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He might have modified other people's memories on that day as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do we think that's going to have further repercussions for Orin down the line, having that memory tampered with?
I don't know. Hopefully, it sounds like if it was in fact Modify Memory, you can only affect 10 minutes of time.
Okay.
So I'm guessing it probably won't.
Mm-hmm.
But that depends on whether he went in and found any other important intel, and then erased Orin's memory of him doing that. Like that'd be real sneaky.
I like it.
I guess this comes back to whether we trust Clain Eovet full stop or not, really, isn't it? It's that question again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's such a web. It's such a web of mysteries. Oh, so many layers and different questions and so much intrigue. I can't wait for us to eventually have a conversation with one person who just comes clean about a bunch of it. It's like, look, here's what the Arcanists are doing. Here's where we're coming from. And, like, yeah, I don't know what the circumstances would be.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm just gonna explain my whole part of the plot.
Yeah.
I still don't know about the footman thing. That's weird. Yeah. I don't know what the faceless footman thing, and I don't really know what's going on with any of the other factions, but I can tell you this.
Yeah.
And this is how many people know about the robots.
Maybe that's why they need the Golem army, because that's the only way they can take the faceless footman down.
Oh my goodness. That's terrifying. If the faceless footman was that powerful, my question becomes, why are you limiting yourself to just like murders? Why have you not retaken the kingdom? At this point.
Maybe that's in their plan.
Mm.
Oh.
Jump in as Prevost or someone.
Yeah. It's sort of like how people think that there one fringe theory for Jack the Ripper is that he was a member of like the aristocracy even the royal family.
Okay.
It's like that, almost a play on that, where like he used to be a member of he used to literally be a leader and then was deposed and then has continued to be Mr. Ripper and is wanting to get back and reclaim.
Wow. Terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, any more thoughts on 65, or should I crack on with 66?
I think go ahead.
Yeah. I just want to say quickly is that there was, I just love the twist that that it was likely the faceless footman who was holding that. Like the way David pulled that off, especially after having had such a relaxed intro, like it was just like, oh, this is
okay. So casual.
Okay, nice.
Yep. Kasuna comes back in her blue robe, and now she's back in a red robe.
Yep. If I was wearing a hat, I have a hat next to me. I'm going to put it on, and then I'm going to take it off for baby David.
For his poker face.
I put on the hat, and now I have removed it.
Yep.
Well done.
And the recap of episode 65 in episode 66 is where everybody else realized that this had taken place.
Mm-hmm.
It seems silly to mention a recap in a recap, but like the point where they all realised as players was beautiful.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Although Grace had worked out the night before and was in a mire of despondency.
Yeah.
So the episode properly started with Gwen and Juna discussing not being able to get in touch with the lads. And then they have a realisation. And they talk to Kasula. And everything kind of twigs into place and they realise it's been half an hour since Blue Kasula disappeared. So they tell Kasula what they've worked out and she marches down the corridors and basically searches the house and everyone in it with like really cool decorum powers, where she just works out that everyone is who they say they are. And that was very cool. And then she's got to Yara in the kitchen and asked if anyone had left in the last half an hour or so. And that's when Kurt came up, because the most surprising thing was that he was there on his day off. He'd left half an hour ago, and he was a footman. So they look for tracks and they find the blue robe that the fake Kasula was wearing. So they decide to use this information and change Ruana into a bloodhound. And that what we were just talking about with the smell came up, where the smell was mainly Kasula's, but there was some strange little scent that had wandered off and disappeared down the street. And then they start setting security around the house, which is quite sensible and comes into play later. Before they have a long rest, everybody has a long rest, Juna tattoos Gwendolyn with a spell slot for cure wounds, which might come in handy in the next episode, hopefully. Now we go back to the lads, and they're heading back to Deromanet House because they figure out that that's where Gwen and Juna are. But on the way, they decide to scope out Chargelt Hall and they look for hiding spots and to see if there's any foot traffic, although it's like 5 a.m, so not many, but some people. And they figure out all the different things, like the magical archway and the lion. And they talk a bit about whether the lion goes underground in the way that the dragon did, whether it's like a portal as well as a guard. So that's possibly something. And then they pop into a pastry shop and it is expensive. Then they finally get back to the stables about 6:30 in the morning, and that's when they get tripped up by some traps set by Kasula and Gwendolyn. So they reunite as Enkidu is having his ankle twisted by some tripwires. That was exciting. And then they have to be tested because they might be evil and or the faceless football. Football? Footman.
Faceless football.
Faceless football.
I think that's most footballs, really. They don't normally come with the faces already drawn on.
So they go inside and catch up, and they list all the things that the faceless footman knows, and they make a plan for going in. A lot of this episode was making a plan and listing things. So they are going to be invisible, and they have a list of questions that they're going to ask Pellegrini, and I'm quite worried about them getting out. Like, it's becoming a stressful thing as I'm listening to them. I'm sort of thinking, oh, how are they going to do? Anyway, that's not my problem. And then, I mean, the main thing that came up is that Gwendolyn does a terrible Juno impression. But so they head off to the cart park. And on the way, Kasula lends them a pocket watch and criticises Rose Senior on always putting roses on things. And then they get to the Chargelt Hall grounds, the park, and a drunk person knocks into them and delivers a hex threat. And David starts the TikTok on the soundtrack and it gets unbelievably tense.
Yeah.
So they find a hiding spot and they have an argument about when to go in, because Enkidu is keen on going straight in there, because if Petrogranius has already left, she's definitely gone. And they're all like, no, she could get there instantaneously, so wait till 9:30. And they wait until 9:28, pop the invisibility bonbons, and then they leave their bushes and go towards the gate. And Orin's goggles can see everyone doing embarrassing things, which is great. And then Enkidu sends a gust of wind, and Ruana barks and distracts people, and they get through the crowd, get to the gate, pop a bonbon, and they are the end of the episode.
Yes.
Oh, David leaves it on a cliffhanger by saying, who's to say Petrogranius is still not inside? It's so tense. Lordy.
Oh, yeah. That was a really, it really was a tense one. I really enjoyed that episode.
Yeah.
I enjoyed all three of these.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've left it in a really nice place. Mm.
We don't even know that they're going to get through the gate. It's so exciting.
And the stakes feel so high.
Yeah.
Because it's not like they're in some random podunk town in the middle of nowhere and it's like, you know, no one will care about this. Mm-hmm. They are knee deep in politics and various powerful organizations, some of which have already like threatened them or already against them.
Mm.
So the idea like this could go any way. I cannot wait to see where this goes. Know.
I am concerned about this lion, I have to say.
Yes. How do you get close enough to like touch it 3 times?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Does it go off if anything gets near it?
I don't know.
Yeah. See, we didn't learn a lot about the dragon one, really, other than, ouch, get out the way.
Like, surely animals can get, like, does it attack anything? Like, any bug? Like, how small can you be?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's this where I start to wonder, like, could we maybe, if only one of them had turned Ruana into a fly.
Yeah,
and
or
Ruana
Juna
had flown up.
Yeah.
They polymorph into something very small, fly up, and then how big does the stroke have to be? Mm-hmm. Is it like, does it have to be like from a large hand, like a human-sized hand? Or can it be from like a fly? Can a fly land on it and stroke it 3 times?
Does that count?
The lion's like, yeah, does that count? That's the kind of thing that I would come up with, I think, if I was a player. Like, because it's like, okay, we don't know. The other option is just dive at it and like just try and grab it
and just hope.
Yeah, just like have Gwendolyn, who I think can like attack the fastest.
Yeah.
Have Gwendolyn just throw herself at it and then real quick, like flurry of blows, just rub the ear 3 times.
Because presumably once it's activated, it actually acts like a lion, right? So it jumps off the plinth and it can pounce on people and it has claws. And
oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah. But maybe it's more, I imagine it might even be like a more powerful lion.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's guarding, you know, such a big deal. Like, it's a big, big deal what it's guarding. Mm-hmm. So,
what else would it be able to do? Yeah. Breathe fire?
That's what I'm wondering.
Ooh.
Or maybe, like, some sort of breath that, like, will either kill people or freeze them, maybe. Like, maybe it's got, like, cone of cold breath to try and freeze people in place or something like that. Or it has mass hold person.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That would be clever.
Yeah. Another thing I'm wondering is... How do we know if the footman has already gotten there? Do we know what the footman's plan is? Is the footman, like, they could be doing anything.
I mean, who's to say they didn't go straight there? Kurt,
exactly.
Kurt, in quotes, left, chucked the robe. Okay, I'm someone else. I'm going straight into Chargout Hall and I've got Petroganius and she's not at home because he's abducted her.
Yeah.
Or murdered her.
Yeah.
Or murdered her. Yeah.
Just to be clear, we have not ruled out the footman being a doppelganger, right?
I don't think so.
Because if you're not familiar, doppelgangers are D&D monsters that can transform into people, but they can also read people's minds in order to help them transform into them more easily. And so it's one of the, if in fact, or rather in order to help them impersonate someone more easily.
Mm-hmm.
So if the doppelganger witnessed somebody outside, maybe snuck up on a guard, knocked them unconscious because they get extra bonuses for sneak attacks, doppelgangers do, and then proceeded to impersonate the guard, they could read the guard's mind, then go and read the rest of the guard's minds. And they, for all we know, they've already gotten in. And the thing is, if they're a doppelganger, they don't even need to abduct anybody. They would just need to ask them the questions. And if the person thinks of the answers, then they get what they want. Yeah, that's scary.
That's really scary.
Yeah, this feels like an episode full of, I don't know, this feels like a trio of episodes that are full of questions and intrigue.
Yep.
And it has just been, it's like each episode has just been ratcheting up tension. Because we got the task a few episodes ago.
Yep.
So now we've just been building up to this task. And as more elements get introduced and more mysteries get piled on top of each other, it really feels
like anything can happen. Yeah, is that like 4 episodes just... on the preparation for this task.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah, maybe more. Because didn't, maybe like 5? Or did Enkidu get abducted at the end of the episode where they received the mission? Or was that an episode
I think you're right. It has been 5.
Yeah. Mm. Like, and it's not like nothing has happened in these episodes. A whole lot has. But this has just been looming over the whole thing during that period. So all the stuff like, you better get out of the city or we're going to kill you one by one. Or like, you all are getting arrested. And it's like, oh my gosh. And the footman's here. What? Like, just one thing after another. Yeah, all.
And now it's come down to you have 10 minutes to complete this mission.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh. I love. Can I also the idea of an invisibility bonbon and like non-detection bonbons? What? just the oh yeah. Have you eaten your invisibility bonbon?
Yeah.
Is such a silly sentence. Again, hats off to David. That one. Yeah. That's just a great idea. It's delightful.
I mean, it's a much more lighthearted way of having like here's a red pill and here's a blue pill.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Zerovir Terek is Morpheus.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Matrix would have had less weight if it had been red bonbon and blue bonbon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a lightheartedness to it.
Yeah.
He opens his hands, which had already been like very, like they had barely been able to contain the bonbons, and he just exposed them.
I just want to go to the bit of the Arcanist Consortium where they've just got like arcane pick-a-mix. I just want to know what else they've got.
Yes. Yeah, the arcane chefs.
Yeah. Like,
I'm imagining it like some sort of like a factory for like a really big company that's formulating like Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
Back there just formulating all sorts of new magical foods that will only be given to members of the Arcanist Consortium.
But here's something else I wondered is, do they keep tabs on how many go in and out of there? Because they took 6, right? And they gave them to the party. Mm-hmm. Is there some kind of inventory that 6 of them are now missing?
I reckon if he signs it out and does sort of like, I feel like it would be quite officially done. So it'd be like an expense form.
Mm.
So he'd have to like say what he was taking and what he was using.
I guess so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you think there would be a limit on how many one person could take out at once to kind of avoid this kind of third-party contract situation.
Don't think you need 6 at once.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is kind of ominous. Like, because he took 6 of each,
six
right?
6 of each.
Yeah. So, like, that's a big pile of of bonbons that he's checking out. And these things, you got to think these things aren't cheap to make.
Mm-hmm. No.
So I'm with you, Pip. He probably did, there was probably some process whereby he had to check them out formally. And I agree with you, Alice, where he probably just lied.
Oh, yeah.
Although, do you think that he checked them all out under his name? Or do you think it's like he, maybe he has a person on the inside and he just slipped them some gold and they basically distributed the bonbon checkouts amongst a number of high-ranking Arcanists.
Mm-hmm.
Just sort of like, one bonbon here or there. Sort of like if you've ever seen Office Space. Like the scheme where it's like if we take a tiny bit of money from one account, then it's not going to come off the same. Whereas if you put one bonbon from 12 different Arcanists, no one's going to care.
Yep.
Should we come up with some final thoughts on this trio of episodes?
Are you asking for a favorite moment?
Favorite moment, and maybe should we introduce, in addition to favorite moments, like biggest question? Because I think as the series has gone on, the questions have grown. Like, what's your favorite moment and what's your biggest question from this set of episodes? I'll go first.
Yeah, go for it.
My favorite moment, I think, is the realization of the footman. As Gwen was explaining it, or rather Grace was explaining it to everyone, I think when everyone's like, I was not expecting. I almost felt like the faceless footman was going to be like the Scranton Strangler in that it just doesn't really come back.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, you know, a thing that was like, oh, wow, remember that? That was wild.
Yeah.
Or the ass crack bandit, where we just never really find out who it was. But then it's like, oh no, not only is it back, we may have just met them. This is wild. I absolutely loved that. And in the way that it just completely reframes everything that they're trying to do. It's like all of our cover has been blown. We don't know, but we don't know by who. And our enemy could be anyone at anywhere at any time. I loved that. That's my favorite moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my biggest question is, what is the deal with the High Circle? Like, what is the significance of the insignia that we see and also them, like, them crowding around the body? Like, what is the significance of that? Why would there be a statue? Normally, you don't see leaders commemorated in statues in death, like, unless it's over their grave. And you rarely have, like, either mourners or people who are potentially, as you, I think it was, I can't remember if it was Pip or Alice suggested, but triumphant even over them. Like, we just took this person out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whatever the circumstances were, I find that to be a really big question for me.
Yes. Huge. I think my favorite moment is the dragon. I thought it was so funny. And the fact that it wanted pastries is obviously top 10 guy moments. Biggest question. I feel like it's about the faceless footmen and who they are, whether they are part of the Children of Havoc or whether they are, like, now I'm thinking it's probably Chargout, because that's an amazing theory. So just who is this person and why are they so important, I think is really interesting.
Nice. Mm. I'm deciding between two favourite moments.
I think you can have two.
Can I have two?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the holidays. Go ahead and have
two. Two small ones. Two small lighthearted ones. Small lighthearted one number one is Grace and Gwendolyn's absolute glee at getting the war fan.
Yes.
Because that was brilliant. And I love it. And then silly tiny little moment number two was the conversation with Prim. Just because I love it when David plays a female character who's a little bit sassy. And yeah. I like Prim, and I think we need to find a way to get Prim to join the party, because she's like a kind of second sort of Myra-y kind of bossiness vibe that I really like. So those are my favourite moments. My question, I think I've learned sometimes we need to look with this podcast at where we aren't looking. So my question is about what on earth is Heron up to? Where has he gone that he hasn't told Nurum, even though that seems to be quite normal, that he doesn't tell Nurum where he's going? Because I'm still not sure which side of the fence I'm sitting, whether I trust Zerevir and Iavet, or whether we trust Heron and Kierda. And I think whilst the focus is on everything that we're doing with the Arcanist Consortium and things like that, I think we also need to be remembering that there's another dude who sent us on a mission first that's got us to where we are. And we should maybe be keeping tabs on him as well. That's my question.
Yeah. Wow. Ooh. I think all of these were great choices. As soon as you mentioned the dragon, I was like, yeah, that was a classic.
Yeah.
And then the conversation with Prim, I'm like, oh, yes. Delectable moments.
There's so many good moments. It's so hard to choose them.
Yeah. Just like so many bonbons.
Yeah.
Just tumbling down great moments.
All the flavors. Before we wrap up, do either of you have anything that you would like to plug quickly?
Oh, well, Alice, you're the new super fan. Do you have anything?
No, I was just in a show, but we finished on Christmas Eve, so I'm not in anything at the moment.
Oh, I hope it went really well.
What show was it?
It did. It was Mrs. Yeah. Scrooge. Thank you very much.
Oh, how exciting!
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, produced by lovely Sarah Gain, who's Deacon.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to Sarah.
Sarah Gain.
Yeah, that's. I kind of want to ask now. Like, this was like a gender bent Christmas Carol.
Sort of. Yes. But it was about someone who was sad and just needed to be shown some kindness, rather than someone who needed to be shown the error of their ways.
Oh, okay. Well, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I wish I'd seen that now. with that, should we go ahead and close it out?
Let's do that. Yeah.
All right. Do we just say a non for now, or do I give it a 1, 2, 3?
We can do a 1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3.
A non for now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.